Amazing that, you know, your whole family's all athletes, first off, all of them, you know, professional level. That's pretty insane because there's five of you. So, did being one of five brothers give you a choice to really play sports? And like, what was it like growing up with five brothers, you know? Or four brothers, I guess you'd say.
Four brothers, the middle of the five. So, man, it was insanity, is what it was. You know, everyone, you kind of one-upped it, right? The brother. And, you know, it was all out brawls all day, every day. We had no furniture in our house. We had a couch, and no coffee tables. We had nothing else. There was nothing because everything turned into a weapon, or, you know, we were throwing each other through the tables. And that's kind of how it went. You know, they just wanted us to go outside, get the energy out. And my dad had a rule, you know, if you guys had an issue, you'll go outside and then take it outside. And we could fight as much as we wanted to. We just couldn't punch each other in the face and we couldn't kick each other in the balls. And that was the two rules. Other than that, all day go at it. And you know, if you have a problem, you'll fix it. And then we're good to go.
That I have two brothers, and that's pretty much, I feel like that's like the brotherly rule. Never touch the face and then never touch the balls, you know. That's really the rule. It
Hey, it's a good rule, man. You
is
might
a
have to
good
do
rule.
that yourself.
So, what would you say drew you to football? I know Gordy was the only baseball player, but what specifically drew you to football compared to like other sports like basketball, baseball, like something like that?
Yeah, so we originally, you know, we grew up playing every sport. I played, my first sport was probably baseball and then hockey. And with hockey, we loved it. Is you could hit, you could also fight. You're allowed to. You know, you go in the penalty box for a few minutes, but you were allowed to fight. And you know, we were aggressive, and we were always you know, liking to hit each other. And hockey, I think, really became our first love. But for us, we didn't play football until high school. That's when it was first introduced to me. I wanted to play because my older brother played, and I thought it was cool. He was a quarterback. He was a, you know, Dan was a beast. He was 6'5", 235 in high school, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And to watch him go on and get a scholarship, you know, that was kind of a dream and that was kind of a goal for me. So watching Dan do it first was what got me hooked. And then after that, all the other brothers, you know, we all just started playing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And that kind of brings me to the next part. So I forgot to mention too, like myself, so I actually went to three colleges throughout my college experience. So I kind of had a weird kind of different experience. So my recruiting process was really weird. I kind of went through it three times where, you know, I was getting recruited by schools and everything. So I just wanted to ask you, like, what was your recruiting process like coming out of high school?
Man, mine was not, say the least. You know, coming out of Buffalo, it was hard. Maybe in New York, which is a big state, you know, there was, I think that year, six or eight guys that went Division One in the entire state. And compare that to Florida, which you know, has a similar population, and there's over 300 guys getting Division One. Wasn't heavily recruited, and you know, I was mediocre at best. You know, I was a two-star, maybe three-star, coming out of high school. So for me, I had some 1AA offers, and I was actually going Ivy League. So University of Penn accepted me to business school, and you know, this was a huge honor to get into that school. You know, it's a lot of people's dreams, but for me, you know, I was going to come out of college with 200K in debt, so I wasn't super excited about it. So I was proud that I got in, but at the last minute, I actually received a scholarship from the University of Maryland. And it pretty much came down to grades. They were about to go on academic probation. They lost a bunch of guys that were coming in because they couldn't pass the SATs or the ACTs. And you know, they reached out and said, "Hey, we have some open scholarships. If we bring you in, are you gonna have a 4.0?" Is basically what they were at. And my brother Dan was there. He was doing well. He had really good grades. And so at the end of the day, man, what got me in D1 was really the fact that I had good grades. You know, I was at that time I graded out on their, you know, they're on their chart as, you know, average at best. And what really pushed me there was the fact that they knew they didn't have to worry about me. They knew I was going to come in. I was going to be a good student. I wasn't going to cause problems, and I was going to work hard. And that's what got me the scholarship at the end of the day, man.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of a huge relief to coaches having the players that are, you don't have to worry about them as students. And then not only that, they're also gonna, like, students like you brought up the team GPA, which obviously is a huge part. So that's also a good lesson for, you know, high school athletes now to realize that how big of a difference your grades can make, because that can be a difference to getting a scholarship or not. Like your situation where you got that last minute one because of your grades.
Yeah, and you got to think there's so much good talent out. You know, at the end of the day, if there's someone that's just as good as you, that grades out just as good as you, but maybe he doesn't have great grades, they're going to go with you all day, every day, because they know you're going to last. A lot of guys go to college and they drop. And that's, you know, they recruit these guys. It's very hard to get players to commit, and then they lose them after a year to grades or sometimes a semester. So if you have good grades, they know they don't have to worry about you. That's a huge, huge bonus on the recruiting side. So do the work, you know, and that also transitions over to the playbook as well. They know that if you can learn in class, you can also learn a playbook. And that's really big at the NFL level. You know, you can actually get through college, you know, not knowing, you know, all the defenses. But when you get to that next level, you're going to have to be smart. You're going to have to learn how to learn a playbook and learn how to read a defense. So you know, you might as well learn now those skills in high school and then in college. And then, you know, you'll have them when you get to the NFL level and you're able to play at the elite level. But I tell people all the time, I wasn't even close to the best fullback in you know, pretty much the world. At the time when I was playing, there's 28 starting fullbacks. You know, a lot of teams don't even carry one. But what got me there was the fact that I was always doing the right things. You know, I had to get through college. You know, first, you have to get through college. Then you have to stay healthy. And then once you finally get there and you see a lot of guys get drafted and get there, you have to learn the playbook, because if you don't know it, you're gone. You know, you're worthless to the team. And I saw a lot of very, very talented players that just could not figure out the playbook because they were kind of handed everything from high school through college and kind of just pushed through on the grade side and never really learned how to learn a playbook.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like there's a lot of stories like that out there with guys who are crazy talented but can never grasp the playbook down.
Yeah, man, it's more thinking. When you have a quarterback like Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, and you run the play wrong or you run the route wrong, they don't want you in there anymore. They immediately lose
track. Right.
And you're not in the lineup anymore. The quarterbacks have a lot of control, especially someone like that, and they don't trust you. You know, they're going to let the coaches know, and they're not going to throw to you anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I know how that is as a quarterback, you know, the trust. It's all about trust.
Absolutely.
What about your transfer process? How'd that go? Was it a smooth process? What kind of brought you to transfer? And, you know, having Rob at Arizona, was that kind of a big deciding factor for you to end up going there?
Yeah, it was interesting. I went into Maryland. It almost felt like they didn't want me there, you know, with a last-minute offer. They never really recruited me. The head coach was a guy that – he was old school, man. He was hard-nosed. And, you know, if I walked by him in the hallway, he put his head down and looked the other way. And I would say, hey, you know, hey, coach, and he wouldn't even look at me. So, you know, it really boiled down to the fact that my brother came on a visit and he told my dad and my brother that I would never play for him. And it pretty much came down to the fact that I missed one practice for an injury. But besides that, man, I was the strongest pound for pound person in the running back room as a freshman. You know, I had my grades, did everything I could to excel, but you know, things happened and I tried to push through an injury. I missed one practice and I was the only goal line fullback, so we couldn't run goal line. And that's kind of how the coach was. So for me, I had to make a choice. And, you know, it was stay there and, you know, maybe never play again. I don't know. I was told I wouldn't. So I was working hard. I was doing everything I should. And, you know, it was kind of just, you know, it was a letdown to hear that. So I had to make a choice. It was a tough choice. And I decided to transfer. And kind of the game plan was that, you know, Rob had every offer in the world at the time. So we wanted to play together because every time we did, we always elevated each other to another level. And when you have a brother, one that you could really count on and lean on, but also brag to and also talk shit to at the same time, it always brought us to another level. And that's why I love playing with him. So we talked to each other and we're like, hey, man, we got to go play somewhere together because when we're together, it's a whole nother level. And so we game planned it out. And, you know, that place ended up being Arizona where, you know, they said if I could come in and at least – contribute on special teams, they let me keep my scholarship. And I went there first and Rob came the next semester and had to sit out a year, but we were able to play together after that.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, you were working extremely hard. You want to be able to have your hard work pay off instead of just kind of getting brushed off by the coach at Maryland. You wanted to go to a place where you can actually have an opportunity to see the field, right?
Yeah, for me, I mean, kind of more about respect.
Yeah, right.
That point, you know, I never, to me, man, like I didn't even, I didn't know if I'd ever start there, and I was working hard, and that was all it was about. I mean, I didn't know if I'd ever go to the next. I never thought I even had a chance at the next level. I didn't even know if I'd had a chance in Division One. So it was pretty cool just getting there. But after that, it was kind of like, hey, this guy doesn't even respect me. So, you know, what am I really doing here? So I left. I was able to have another chance. And I think I made the right decision. And I went to Arizona, and I was able to contribute immediately. So it was a great play by me.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. What about what's your thought kind of on fullbacks? How, you know, like nowadays they're kind of a, almost like a dying position, a lot of people say, and kind of how a lot of people not respect it, but the real football people understand that how important a good fullback is, like Kyle Juszczyk or like a Pat Ricard, like those, the Ravens 49ers use those fullback extremely well. So what's kind of your stance and thoughts like on fullbacks?
Yeah. And you have to have the right person. That, you know, you have to have a tough-nosed guy with leverage. A lot of teams are coming in, they try to use a tight end, but right. A tight end have that scheme still. I mean, some do. I mean, some do a good job of it, but most don't. And most, you know, they don't have the leverage. They don't have the toughness to go in there and dig someone out. So I think it's a position that if you have the right guy there, it definitely helps. But at the same time, I think it's a position that you also have to contribute in other places. So you know, if you want to make it, you know, I was lucky enough to get 4 credited seasons, and really I made it because I was also able to play other things. You know, I had to play all 4 special teams. It's kind of like the third string tight end. You know, if he can't play special teams, but I can play all of them, they're going to keep a fullback over the third string tight end all day because I'm contributing on 4 special teams and I'm going to doing a good job and I'm working hard at it. So I think there's definitely a spot there. I think it's also something that if you can contribute more than just at fullback, they're going to weigh their options and say, hey, why are we carrying this third tight end or this fourth tight end when we could bring in this guy and he's going to also do all this other stuff as well. So, you know, it's something I think that will always be in the game at some point. But some teams, depending on their offense, you know, they're going to carry one, some aren't.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So being a fullback and going to the NFL, were you expecting to be undrafted?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, there was chances. With Peyton. But for me, it was almost a – at that point when you're that late in the draft, a lot of times they're just picking for value. They're not really picking for need. I saw it with my brother Dan go in the 7th round. And, you know, they picked him for value. He was the best player left in the draft at that time. And he was stuck behind, you know, 4 or 5 other tight ends that they also really liked well. And he kind of just got pushed back because of it. And if he was able to actually pick where he wanted to go, he would have went somewhere where, you know, maybe they had 2 good tight ends and the 3rd spot was open and up for grabs. So I went undrafted. I was able to pick the team I was going to. And my agent did a great job of scouting it out. And, you know, he put me in a position where I had a really good chance to lead.
All right. And so what was the most important thing that kept you in the NFL? Because you were there for almost 4 years, right? What was the most important thing that the NFL taught you?
Man, for me, what kept me was just versatility. That I could go down there and play all special teams. That was the round. But, yeah, that was pretty much it. That and just, man, going in there and getting the job done, just mental toughness and knowing your assignment was huge as well on the playbook, being ready on game day.
It's really, yeah, I think it's really important to be versatile, like, in any sport. I think you can connect that everywhere because if you get a chance to play, you got to take it no matter what. So being able to do a lot really helps, I feel like.
Yeah, for sure. Right. Whatever the coach asks, if you can do it, you're going to stick no matter what. So if other guys don't want to do it and you will, you're going to be there. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I never had run down on a kickoff cover in my whole – in high school, I wasn't talented at. I didn't really know the skills to do it, but when they asked, I went in there and I did it, and I did a good job of it, and it kept me around. Kept me around that I was one of the only offensive players on the team that would play on what they would call the defensive side of special teams.
Mm-hmm. And what advice do you have for young athletes that want to, you know, maybe go D1 or even try and make it to the NFL?
So advice, man, you got to put the work in. It is. I mean, what took us to another level, especially in high school, my dad actually brought in a speed coach when we were in high school. He brought in a speed coach, and it really elevated our game. It taught us how to run correctly. It taught us how to be more explosive, how to really use your arms, and just got us faster and more agility. But it came down to us running the entire summer when everyone else was off and having fun at summer camp and all that. We were in the parking lot. We were on the track, and we were just running until we threw up. We were doing agility drills and ladders in the middle of the summer, and we were toast, man. I mean, it was so hard to go to it every single day and just run as hard as you possibly could until you threw up, and that's what we were doing. But we had so much proof. First year we did it, it was just our family and two or three friends. And the next year, the guy who started it, named Damaris Johnson, he had three high schools signed up just because of the result he saw from us. So I think you can really improve your skills young level or at a young age. There's so much to improve on. If you put the work in, you're going to get to that next level. Foot drills, speed drills, even just catching a football, go out there, get the jugs machine and stay after practice and catch. So you don't ever drop a pass. I mean, there's a lot that you can do, especially at a young age, that will make you a lot better as an athlete.
All right. Yeah, so
that's awesome.
Yeah. So before we go right on to we're going to ask you about Ice Shaker. But did you have a welcome to the NFL moment?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of them. I went against, Keith Brooking. I think he was 14 years league.
Oh, wow. He was good.
When I got there, and him and I had Sean Lee in my rookie class as well. And so the day before our first preseason game, we were still going full speed when we just had shells on. And, we were running that first play. It was ISO. And, it was supposed to be a walkthrough. And we're running full speed. And, no one would give up. No one would let me block them because I was this undrafted free agent rookie. And so they went back down to me. If the other fullback went in, who was a four-year veteran, they just fit up real nice. But if I went in there, we were smashing heads with shells on. And that was kind of like, man, like – This is a real deal. But every day, every single day in practice was like that because, I was the new guy. I was the guy that, wasn't supposed to be that good. So if I took them out or I blocked them or I had a good hit on them, that was a big deal to them. So every single day for me was an absolute grind, and it was a battle, man.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now it's time to talk about Ice Shaker, which, like, me and Mike go to the gym. I don't know about if Robbie does, but, like, the thing is
– Oh, Robbie.
So Blender Bottle is obviously – that has been around for years and years. And, like, everyone's been complaining about Blender Bottles for years and years and years. And then finally someone has the balls to figure out just a much better way to do it. So – what was the turning point? So, like, I've read about, the shaker bottle and all that stuff, but what was your turning point, like, that you're finally like, screw this, like, I'm going to go look for something, and if not, I'm gonna do this?
So, the turning point was I was at the gym here in Texas, and I was actually in my truck here, and I grabbed my bottle, and there was just a ton of water from the sweat. It got all over my clothes. I'm walking in the gym, and I'm like, man, I look like a bum already walking in, and when I'm going to the gym, I'm trying to look swole and look good. So I was already looking like walking in. I was actually benching. And every time I put my bottle down, I was leaving those sweat rings on the ground. And it finally hit me. I'm like, man, there's so many insulated bottles on the market. Why is there nothing that's super easy to fill, super easy to clean, super easy to mix, and will keep my drink cold and won't absorb the odor like the plastic bottle does? So everything out there at the time kind of had like this little tiny top on it that you try to like stick ice in, or you need a funnel for it. And then it was super hard to clean. So I finally got to the point where I'm like, hey, I just want one bottle that I could use all day, every day. I could bring it to the gym, bring it to work, use it in the pool, bring it on the airplane, whatever it was. I just wanted one bottle. If I needed to make a shake, I could make a shake in it at any time. and went online just thinking, man, someone had to make something like this already, right? Because every idea you have that you think is unique, someone's already done. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find anything on the market besides just the regular old classic shaker that had been around for 20 years. There was actually stainless steel bottles online. None of them were insulated. So if you put hot or cold in, metal conductor, so you burn your hands. Or it'd be really, really cold. So at that point I went home and I just said, man, I am going to make the best bottle that I can for myself. And, I was super passionate about it, which was good, because anything you start up is a lot harder than you think it's going to be, no matter how great the idea is. And Mike, as a business owner, man, I am sure you know all about it, and, how hard things really are. If you do have a following, even if your family or your brother or whatever it is famous, it doesn't matter. You know, this is something from the ground up. And, you know, on the first day, I think I sold one bottle was, how many I sold the first day, the first week I might've sold, I don't know, maybe 10 max. And, at that point it really hit me that, you know, I'm going to have to start building trust, and I'm going to really have to start grinding to get this product out there and to build trust, so that people actually want to buy this product.
Yeah, that's a great point. I definitely, for me, I kind of went through a similar type of thing where I started off really small, you know, a couple athletes here and there. But like you said, I had to build that trust as well with my athletes and with the parents, especially because they want to be able to send their kids to a coach that's qualified and who's going to get their kids the right coaching stuff. And the same thing with your product. Like, no one wants to buy a product that they don't know about, but all of a sudden a couple people start using it, now there's reviews on it, and now it's starting to get out there. So it's, you know, yeah, that's a very good point about building trust, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It was tough. A lot of just going to shows, getting the product in front of people, doing whatever I could to get the word out there. And it you start small, and the way you build is you build by having a great product and great service, and I'm sure you've seen it as well. You know, you have one customer, you take care of them, they tell their friends. That's the best way to get any product or service out there, is to just do a really good job. I mean, I tell people, need a patent. You don't need something that, you know, has completely new that no one's ever heard of before. You just have to have passion for it, and you have to do it better than everyone else would. If you do a good job of it, you don't need something that no one's ever heard of. That's very hard to teach somebody something completely new, a completely new concept. You could take a concept that's already super successful, that somebody else is already doing, and just do a good job at it. That's all you got to do to be successful in life.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what me and my dad, we really try to focus on, just, you know, taking care of our athletes, our guys, and just basically working it from that way, and just try to be as genuine people, like, as we are, because just the way he brought me up and the way that he mentored me as an athlete growing up too, we kind of want to, you know, do that to our guys. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah. They take care of you, and you know, they tell all their friends, and exactly. That's all. You have to care, and you have to try, and you have to put the work in.
So I know you were on a Shark Tank with your shaker. So I was curious, how confident were you going into Shark Tank? Were there any, like, butterflies, or were you, did you just know going straight in that it would be a hit?
It was kind of mixed feelings. I was confident. I prepared, and that's why I was confident. Watched every single episode. I had 8 seasons to watch. I wrote down every question. I knew every answer to any question that they'd asked in the past. And so I was pretty confident going in. And when you're prepared, you know, you're not that nervous. I was super lucky and fortunate that I had my 4 brothers in the back room. And, you know, I screamed for them. They ran out of the back room and gave me a huge bump. And it was game on at that point. So that really took a lot of pressure off us as well. And then, you know, playing a game of Flip Cup against the Sharks and whooping them in Flip Cup really lightened up the room as well. So after that point, you know, it was just smooth sailing at that point. And, you know, it was good. I probably was about 20 minutes in, though, and I still hadn't got an offer. And that was kind of when I was like, oh, man, you know, maybe this product isn't as cool as I thought it was. And that was kind of the first time I kind of got a little bit nervous. And then Mr. Wonderful actually saved me, man, and threw the first offer out there. And, you know, the rest of the Sharks all ended up coming in as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think like looking at that, like A-Rod and Mark Cuban were the ones that gave you like the final, like you accepted their offer. And I think having like A-Rod, like he's an actual athlete, like he definitely was probably like, oh, blender bottles, like they're really not that good. So he's probably like, okay, I could actually use this.
Yeah, what made it so good too was just the fact that it was simple, you know? It was something that people actually understand. It was a proven concept that I just made better. You know, there wasn't anything like crazy or brand new about it. It was very simple to explain, and all I did was make something that's been around for a while. I just made it better, and that was it. And everyone could see it, and it was easy to explain, and I think that's why it was so successful as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm really curious about this. So, like, I know a little bit about the film business and, like, the TV stuff a little bit. Like, I'm obviously no expert, but, like, being behind, like, what's it like behind the scenes? Because, like, I know they have to, you know, make some money and have some drama in there. Like, what was it like behind the scenes at Shark Tank?
So, it ended up being, we actually record for about an hour is probably what I was in the room for. On TV, you see about 8 minutes. So, they cut it down to really, they asked me everything. They knew everything about me in high school. They knew everything about me in college. After football, all they wanted to know down to every detail. So they drilled me pretty hard. You don't see that stuff because it's kind of boring. And then they put all the good stuff on there. But the show really is what they say it is. You know, they didn't know me. They didn't know my name. They didn't know my company walking into it. They didn't know my family was there. They actually hid us. They hid Rob so that nobody on the entire set knew that he was there. Until he actually walked out on the set, and everything's real. You know, the exposure from it's real. The money that they invest is real. It goes into your bank account. And what also is real is the amount of work that comes after it. You know, your sales explode overnight, which they did. They probably did for a good 30 days. And even after that, it was still a nice little ride. And then, you know, we had an update as well a year later. But with that, you know, at that time I was working out of my house with the product. With a storage shed as well, or storage unit. And, you know, it was pretty much just me. And I was still working for my wife at the time. I was pretty much side hustling this. And overnight, it turned into a full-time business where I had to take care of everything from customer service, shipping, engraving, product creation, everything that you could possibly think of, you know, 10 times overnight as well as the sales. So as awesome as it is, you're not just sitting on a private island right afterwards. You're actually grinding. And once that wave ends, you're then trying to figure out a way to keep it going. And I think that's when a lot of people struggle. We just going on to year four now, it's just grinding the whole way. And that's how business is. That's how entrepreneurship is. And every day you just try to find a way to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's really cool to hear that. About the kind of behind the scenes, like I never would have thought that it's a whole hour, and then they don't really know much about you, and they're asking you about high school, college. That's interesting to me. I never knew that.
Yeah, there's a lot. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. So my next question is, so you know, we're a newer startup company and stuff like that, and you know, myself, I'm pretty young. So I was just wondering what kind of advice do you have for young entrepreneurs or young companies that are out there right now?
Man, I mean, I think it's everything we hit on already.
Right.
You have to be super passionate about what you're doing because, you know, there's so many ups and downs. I'm sure you guys got crushed by COVID and everything that happened there. And, you know, if you weren't passionate about it, you'd give up. If you are passionate, you'd find a way to get around it and you do online stuff and, you know, you'd find ways to still get content to your guys and you'd love doing it, you know, you'd absolutely love doing it. And that's what it has to be. And so that, and man, you got to play the long game. You know, you have to look at it as a long game and you have to bring value to people and you really have to separate yourself from everyone else. So what's your experience like compared to everyone else? And for us, you know, it's, you know, why would someone come to our website? What kind of value are we bringing versus Amazon? And we sell on Amazon as well, but, you know, we want people to come to our website because we want to provide something different for them, a whole different experience so that they remember it, they come back and they tell their friends as well. So if you're someone like me that's in the online retail game, we find ways to provide things that nobody else can. That's with stuff like, you know, free workouts that we send. I'll send a 7-day shred that I created myself. You know, I wrote down the minute I woke up, everything I did, everything I ate, every calorie I took in from fats, carbs, protein, what time I went to bed, every single exercise that I did. And I said, hey, I am going to throw this into an ebook and just give it away for free, because I know that it will help someone. And if they can't do it, they probably know somebody that wants it, and they'll share it with them. And that's kind of how you have to be. You just have to look at things as, how can I help my customers, instead of saying, how do I make money? Because when you look at it that way and you actually help them, the money comes anyways. So do the right thing, provide value, and you'll see the results anyways, and you'll feel a lot better about it, and you'll get a lot better response as well. So that's kind of how I see it at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love that too. Yeah, so Zach and Robbie have actually been on calls with me with kind of other companies that we kind of want to work with, partner with, to bring more value to us. Like we just signed a partnership with this company called Locker Room Talk. And basically what they do is the purpose of them is to give athletes like the real life experiences of college, like while they're in high school, so that they're prepared when they get to college. Because so many high school kids, once they get to college, they're unprepared.
They're free.
So, yeah. So, you know, that's why we want to work with Locker Room Talk, because a lot of what we want to do is help our athletes get to college. And that's kind of Locker Room Talk directly aligns like with our, you know, our visions and stuff. So that's kind of what our reason for that is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great idea for sure. I mean, a lot of guys get homesick. A lot of guys are going, you know, doing whatever they want, because they're finally able to do whatever they want without parent supervision. So, you
right.
know what I mean? And then just also just what to expect on the athlete side and the student side as well. I mean, college is a lot of work. And that was a tough day. I mean, it was waking up early, mandatory study hall, mandatory, dining or breakfast, and then, right to classes or workout. And then after that, it was either workout or right to practice. So you got home and you studied the playbook and you studied for school the next day and you did it all over again, man. That's a grind. And it does take a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what kind of brings me to my next point is with you guys, I feel like there's something that, you know, we could do together, whether it's if we can get like a, cause I know you do custom shakers, right?
Absolutely, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe we would love to maybe get like a custom shaker for you, like with our logo on it and stuff like that. If there's something else that we can kind of do going forward, because obviously what you as a company directly, again, it aligns with what we want to do as a company.
Yeah, absolutely. We work with a ton of companies, and the bottles are awesome because, you know, they're going to help you live a more active, healthy lifestyle. They're going to align perfectly with athletes. But for you and for brands, what it does is it's a way for you to make money, but it's also a way for you to advertise, because these bottles go everywhere that everyone goes. So they're not just going to bring it to the gym. You know, they're going to bring it to work. They're going to bring it on the airplane. They're going to bring it to every practice. And all you're doing is saying, hey, you know, I go to Velocity, you know, this is your logo is right there. It's free advertising for you as well. So, we love working with companies, and I think, you know, and I love approaching them because I'm adding value to them, and, you know, they're making money and they're getting advertising out of it, and they're giving their customers a great product.
Yeah, exactly. And especially it's really been hitting me lately, because as it's starting to get hot around, you know, it's starting to get hot around here. It's amazing how many kids come to workouts unhydrated. We get through that dynamic warm up and they're already gassed. I'm like, then I go to them, I'm like, did you drink anything before this? You hydrate? Like, no. But I feel like if they have the ice shaker, they're gonna want to hydrate more, because it's in a cool, nice custom bottle that's also gonna keep their drink cold at the same time, right?
Absolutely. And came out and said that each and every player has to have their own water bottle. So you can't use the hoses anymore like you used to in practice.
Right.
You have your own bottle now, and it's probably going to have to be provided by the student. So we saw that come across, and we're putting in programs like that to help out the schools to make sure, you know, that the kids do have their own bottle. And we are able to customize them with school logos or company logos, and also put their name on it as well.
That's awesome. So yeah, we would definitely like to talk about that more going forward, whether it's something that's just like me and you in a separate call or something else going forward, we'd definitely love to do that.
Absolutely, man. I'd love to work with you guys.
Yeah, for sure. So then kind of the last part of our series of questions is, so another reason why we do this is not only for the athletes, but also for the parents to be able to, you know, go and look at something, because, you know, being a parent to an athlete is huge. So we just kind of want to ask you a couple of questions, but obviously you're a dad, so now you know how it is being a parent. So we want to kind of ask you a couple of questions that, you know, will be good for our parents to get some advice from.
Absolutely.
So what have you learned as an athlete and as a businessman that you would like to pass on down to either your children or, you know, just other younger generations?
Man, always hard work, man. That's kind of what we were raised on. We had to earn everything that we had. That was kind of my dad's rule. And I think it was actually his rule at first because he didn't have much to give. You know, he worked two jobs for 6 years to get his company off the ground. But even when he had the money, even when he had to do it, he refused to. And it wasn't because he didn't want to, because it's you want to. As a parent, I know, because I want to give my kids everything. Every parent wants to give their kids the world. But, you know, his rule was you had to earn it. And I think that's one of the best lessons that you could teach your kids. A lot of kids that get everything handed to them. They get the new car. You know, they get whatever they want handed to them. They never learn value of a dollar, never learn how to work for it. And they really never respect it. So for me, what I want to teach my kids is, you know, how to earn what they have, to earn every single thing that they have and really deserve it instead of just being handed it.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. What about, do you think, I know a lot of former football players are kind of indifferent on having their own kids play football. So what do you think, are you going to have your kids play football when they get older?
So for me, you know, they play. I think, and what I like is what my dad did. You know, he didn't let us play until high school. And he had reasons for it. One of his number one reasons was that as a kid, you're growing so much. You have a lot of growth plates that, you know, they haven't necessarily settled yet. And he just felt like if we sustained an injury too early in life, that, you know, it could change the rest of our life for us. And when you're that young, you don't know what you're doing. You know, you could, you're up. You know, I wouldn't have. I would have went in there and I would have played hurt. I would have done whatever because I was so young. All I knew was that I wasn't going to stay on the ground. You know, I wasn't going to let somebody beat me. So my dad put this rule in. I think it was a great rule that we couldn't play until high school. And so I think that's one rule that I would have. If my kids come to me in high school and say, hey, I want to play football, I can't say no, because that's how I got where I am today. And, you know, the game doesn't just teach you how to play a game. It teaches you so much more. It teaches you that discipline. It teaches you the hard work. It also teaches you how to be a team player and how to, you know, really act around a team and do things, you know, one mission, one goal, and really accomplish things as a team. And I think that plays out so much in life. It's not just on the field. That's in business. That's as an entrepreneur. That's huge for that. So there's so much more that you learn when you play football, and it doesn't have to be just football. I mean, it really could be any sport, but if they come to me and say they want to play football, there's no way that I can deny that, because my whole life and everything that I've learned and everything that I've done has came from football.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that. Like, I can't even imagine, like, you know, without football, like, where I'd be based on, you know, my experiences coming up and as a player, as now as a young coach and everything. I couldn't even imagine. So, yeah,
really, exactly. The game's a lot safer now than I played. And, you know, there's a lot to protect players. You know, you see in college, I mean, if you lead with your head, you're out of the game. That wasn't like that. Lead with your head and you lit someone up, you were celebrating. And, you know, at the same time, you were hurting because you took a huge hit, but you were still celebrating. But, you know, they've done so many things. Technology has come so much further. And, I'm sure by the time my kids are actually playing, they'll have sensors in the helmet. They'll have everything. They'll be a lot better and safer than I ever was. And, you know, I think I'm all right.
For sure.
So, the last question we have, I believe, is, what is your favorite memory as a dad so far? Or if you can't narrow it down to one, maybe like your top three.
Wow. Oh man. That's tough. I mean, it's probably man, the first time you have a kid is definitely an amazing experience. So much changes. I mean, you have so much more responsibility, but like you finally see things in a completely different way that you've never seen before. So I think, you know, the first boy was incredible. All three of them were, but proudest moment, man, every day is really a blessing. Every day my kids do something where I'm just like, that's amazing. Like, that's incredible. Like, it touches your heart.